From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, October 22nd. I'm John Myers from KQED. A little stopped up and sick, I'm sorry to tell you. But don't worry, you won't catch it by listening to the podcast.
Is it pennant fever? Giants pennant fever?
No, it's kid cold season, apparently, and they've given it to me.
Oh, well.
You have pennant fever.
I do.
I can feel the warmth, the radiating warmth.
It's going to be a...
Although it wasn't a great night for the Giants Thursday night, was it?
No, no. It's going to be a busy weekend.
All right. Anthony York from LA Weekly. Anthony York from LA Times. Let's do this again. Anthony York from Capital Weekly and the LA Times. I think I just blended your two employers
That's okay.
Okay. Let's keep going. Busy weekend for Anthony. Busy weekend for all of us. We are days away.
This is our penultimate election podcast.
Ooh, that's right. Are we going to make predictions next week? I'm not so hot on predictions.
I predict that we don't make predictions next week.
Excellent. I think you have 100% chance of being right on that. Though I know we'll say something smart, alecky, about it.
There will be polls.
So we have a new poll. So we have a poll to talk about that came out this week from the Public Policy Institute of California. Your friends at the LA Times have a poll coming out this weekend.
They do.
Which they leaked out their Proposition 19 marijuana numbers here on Friday.
The puff of white smoke.
Up in smoke.
No.
Starting to and PPIC also found that the pot measure is...
flaming out.
Exactly. No. Being extinguished. Whatever our funny little lines are. Well, let's talk about the governor's race first, and we'll talk about some of this other stuff, Senate and some of the others later. And this is obviously the story that... seems to have dominated the headlines the last 2 days, and that is Jerry Brown with an 8-point lead in this poll. 44% to 36% for Meg Whitman. 16% undecided, but I want to talk about the undecideds in a minute with some of that data. But that is the largest lead in what I think most people call the, I don't want to necessarily say reputable polls.
The
statewide public polls that we get to see everything, and their data is generally accepted, their methodology is generally accepted, to be fair.
I think Field and PPIC both have that reputation.
Exactly. So 8-point lead. What do we make of this race? This has been a tough week or two, I guess, for the Whitman camp, I guess I would say.
Yeah, and you just get the feeling and it really began at the third debate, that the Brown campaign – believes they have this race put away. I don't think that's saying it too strongly.
You think they would say that?
No, they've come close. They've come close. I mean, let's put it this way. They've got a lead in the fourth quarter. They're playing prevent defense. I mean, they really are. They're appearing at big rallies. Jerry's on his tour of college campuses. Today it's USC with Barack Obama.
I don't even think it's prevent defense. I almost think it's like if they have the ball, I'm using a football analogy because I thought about this last night, they're just doing these short little running plays to just let the clock run.
They just need one first down.
Exactly. Right.
Right.
They'll take 3 to 4 yards every play.
Yeah. Yeah. Whitman would have to recover the onside's kick, I think, at this point. But
sack the quarterback and push him back.
All right.
Enough football.
Up in smoke. All right. Okay. But it's just the feeling of the campaigns. I mean, you know, things could change, but it feels like it's on a trajectory where the Brown campaign at least believes that they're going to win this thing. And the poll numbers bear that out. I mean, this is the widest lead, and it'll be interesting to see what we see in the LA Times poll this weekend. I don't know if the Field poll will come out one more time before the election. But I think it's Brown's race to lose at this point.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, it would seem like to me that if Whitman can win this race, and I don't want to say she can't win. I want to be very careful to say that. 10 days is a long time, as we've seen things in politics historically. Things blow up. Things happen. Crazy stuff happens. But it would have to be something. It would have to be a mistake by the Brown campaign, it would seem like, at this point. Whitman's ability to make her case to the voters seems at a place where now you need the front runner to stumble somehow to make this happen. I mean, look at the numbers in the poll. It's an 8-point lead. 3 weeks ago, they were in a virtual tie. It was 38 Brown, 37 Whitman. So clearly Brown has done much better in bringing up numbers on his side. When you look into the numbers, what I found really fascinating, let's talk about this for a minute, because the Brown campaign had a conference call with reporters
Wednesday
before the poll was officially out.
But we had all seen it.
We had seen it. We're not the news organization that broke the embargo.
Wall Street Journal. Excuse me.
You got a little thing in your throat there.
Yeah, I do. In my craw.
But what I found interesting in this poll, and I asked on that call Brown's campaign manager, Steve Glazer, about it, you tell me what you think, is that when you look at when the voters say that the issue that matters the most to them are jobs and the economy.
Right.
And then they asked which candidate would do better on that issue. And they say Meg Whitman. Yeah. And yet they are still picking Brown. What do we make of that? The Brown campaign says it's an issue of character, and that if the voters haven't gotten if the voters can't get comfortable with Whitman on the character issue, then the rest of the issues are secondary. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, what do you think?
I don't know.
We're reading tea leaves here.
Yeah, I looked at that number too, and if you accept that jobs are the economy are the most important issues in voters' mind, it doesn't make sense that the candidate they feel would be the best on that issue would be behind in the polls. And so, the only thing you can say is that it may be the most important issue. It's not necessarily the defining issue.
Well, and what I find fascinating maybe, I mean, again, it's all tea leaves, is maybe the Whitman campaign's not talking about it enough, or maybe it's not getting through somehow. Maybe it's not – and should they not win there's going to be a whole lot of, finger pointing, probably at the press, as to whether or not we gave them the space, the time they wanted to talk about jobs and the economy. But at the same time, if you look at the messaging out of the Whitman campaign over the last several weeks, it's all anti-Brown.
Right.
It's not necessarily what she's going to do. Now, they may think they made that case weeks ago with the public, but I don't know. Maybe they didn't.
No, and I'm sure we'll have this discussion, Capital Weekly is sponsoring an election postmortem that
a plug.
You will be a panelist on. I will be moderating a panel, and
this
will
be
a subject.
How can people attend that?
They could look at the Capital Weekly website, capitalweekly.net, for more information. Capital with an O.
We're a nonprofit podcast. Now back to our program.
Yes, but the messaging from the Whitman campaign at this point is all over the place. I mean, yesterday there was something on Latinos. There was something on Brown and water. I came home to find a piece of mail on education. I mean, it's just there's not a consistency of messaging. And I know this was a critique that Gray Davis's campaign made of Al Checky, the Democrat who Democratic CEO who ran against Gray Davis and lost in 1998. Was that there was no focus of the messaging. And if that is indeed the defining issue and their message and their and the polling bears that out, and Whitman has been effective at least in planting the idea in voters' minds that she will be the best candidate on that issue, I don't know why they're not hammering it. I'm sure their pollster could tell us why, that maybe it only moved numbers a certain point. But it does feel now as if they're looking to break off small chunks of votes wherever they can, and I don't think it's and we'll see if that's enough to get to 50% or whatever you need to win, 49% to win this race.
Yeah. If you look at I mentioned this a moment ago, the folks at PPIC sent me this chart that talks about the undecided vote, because in this race, or in this poll, I should say, 16% of the voters were still undecided.
Still pretty large percentage.
Which seems like a pretty large percent. So if you break down those undecided voters, more of them are Democrats and Republicans, though that's not surprising to me because that kind of plays out with the registration data in the state. But 48% of the undecideds in this poll are conservatives.
Right.
And that stands out to me because that seems to be – that is Meg Whitman's base.
Wait,
and they
48,
haven't,
48 are conservative, and yet there are more Democrats? So some of the Democrats are calling themselves conservative?
Well, there are a large number of independents. I think they're slightly larger than their registration, 24% or so of independents out of this. I mean, yeah, you're going to find Democrats who aren't necessarily diehard liberal Democrats. I guess that's what I would take out of this, too. That's fair to say. But I want to just go to the ideology issue just broadly. Conservatives, by definition, you would think would be typical Whitman supporters, would they not?
Although, it depends on what the definition of conservative is. I mean, we've heard Jerry Brown say, "Hey, I'm a fiscal conservative. I'm tight with a buck."
But these are undecided voters,
right? But
what's going to make them decide?
But I don't know what they're how if there are some Democrats there. It sounds like from those numbers, there must be some Democrats who are calling themselves conservatives, right?
Sure, but let me give you some other ones here. 36% of the undecideds are in parts of Southern California outside of L.A., Inland Empire, places like that, places that are Republican strongholds in the state. Only 13% of the undecideds are in the Central Valley. And let's talk about the Central Valley for a minute, because in this poll, Brown is winning by a hair in the Central Valley, which is not a place you would expect him to be winning over Meg Whitman.
No. No.
Again, none of these, I think, by and of themselves are any kind of particular sign that, oh, this is it. But cumulatively to me, they feel like, you know, warning signs for the Whitman campaign that they haven't made their case with some of the voters they need to make it with. Los Angeles numbers for Whitman for Brown in this poll were quite high.
Right.
His support among Latinos, his support among women. These are areas that you can't be a Republican in California and lose in the way that this poll shows and still win.
Right. And if you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger's number in 2003 and 2006, then you'll see that that is in fact true. What can I say? Whitman has work to do, and she has work to do, it seems to be, among all voters, among her own base as well as voters in the middle.
And yet, as we said at the beginning, is it really the work she has to do, or is it something that the Brown campaign has to screw up?
At this point, well, I mean, it is the hour is getting late, yep. Right? I mean, sands in the hourglass.
The days of our lives.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Senate race for a minute. PPIC also had numbers on that. Race tightening, which is not surprising from everything we feel like we have seen. Barbara Boxer still ahead, but by 5 points, 43-38 over Carly Fiorina, 13% undecided in that race. So fewer undecideds in that race. The gap had been 7 points in PPIC 3 weeks ago. Now Boxer's lead is down to 5. That's a tight race. You would still think conventional wisdom it leans toward Boxer, though I know news organizations are kind of starting to call this a toss-up race. But the one other outlier out of this, and then you jump in here, that I saw not directly related to that, but because this is a national race with national themes,
right?
The president, the stimulus, the Congress, all of these issues. President Obama's approval rating among likely voters in this poll is down to 49%. That can't be a great outlier for Boxer.
Yeah, Boxer has used the president in a radio ad we saw this week.
The president is here at the end of the week. Yeah,
Boxer
raising money. And then also, the number of people in this poll who said it would either be a good thing or it made no difference if the Congress was controlled by Republicans is pretty high.
Right.
Which also doesn't seem to be great for a Democratic 18-year incumbent.
But it does 18 years, 92. Oh, yeah, 92. Wow.
I've been listening to Carly Fiorina's statements.
But it does sort of underscore an interesting difference between the governor's race and the Senate race, about whether or not the Senate race is more prone to getting swept up in some of these national themes and some of this national Republican momentum, whereas the governor's race might be somehow exempt from that. I mean, some of that might have to do with the way people feel about Barbara Boxer versus Jerry Brown. But we're seeing this in legislative races, too, where some races that Democrats won narrowly over the past years, in strong Democratic years, that you would think on the natural would be up for grabs in a big national Republican year, they're off the table.
You thinking Sierra Nevada foothills again?
That one, and then also Southern California in the Coachella Valley area, Imperial County, Manuel Perez, and Marty Block.
He's the Democrat assemblyman.
And then Marty Block in San Diego. They're both in seats that were held this decade that were held by Republicans. And so you'd think if this was going to be a big Republican year, there might be a chance for Republican pickups there. Well, there aren't.
And those were both tight races when they won in 2008.
Right. In fact, Republicans are actually on defense up in the Sacramento area in this seat with the Pan versus Puno seat, although maybe this is another podcast. But there is an article about it.
To let people know, that's the 5th Assembly District in the suburb of Sacramento, which has been represented by a Republican, but has been an interesting district for me because the registration numbers for Democrats have been coming up.
And you live there, right?
And I live there, yes. Right. I'm getting bombarded with Andy Puno and Richard Pan mail.
Right.
But anyway, your larger point here is that at least in the other races, and I don't know if you've seen polling on the Puno-Pan race, I'll defer to you, but a lot of money getting spent here. And
yes.
Yeah, Republicans do feel on the defense, it seems like.
Now, their best chance for a pickup, though, that said, might be in the Central Valley, where Democrat Joan Buchanan appears to be in trouble against Abram Wilson, the mayor of San Ramon, who Buchanan defeated last time around.
That's the 15th Assembly District.
It's the 15th. But the point is, I mean, and you're going to hear a lot about this, I'm sure, in 2 weeks, about the California firewall. I mean, if Brown wins, if Boxer is reelected, there will be a lot of talk about how, and if Republicans take back the House and make gains in the Senate, maybe even take over the Senate, there'll be a lot of talk about how the sort of West Coast and specifically California exceptionalism. So, you know, that's for the beard strokers and deep thinkers for 2 weeks from now.
It is, but just at the risk of going way too deep in this, but hey, you know, we're a politics podcast.
Here we are. Knee deep.
You know, there's so much data out of, you know, this one poll can't tell us everything, but one of the things I like about the Public Policy Institute polls is that they do ask a lot of different questions about what people are thinking about all kinds of things.
Right.
And it does, in some sense to me, feels like a little bit of a snapshot of where people are. And this poll was taken now, you know, a week and a half ago or so, or 2 weeks ago.
17th was when it ended, right?
Yeah, yeah.
10th to the 17th.
Yeah, so, you know, there's some data in there that's not that far from where we're sitting. So a couple of things that you said made me stand out here. First of all, there are a lot of people worried about the economy. You know, here we're sitting on Friday. New unemployment numbers came out. Still 12.4% unemployment for the month of September. So still pretty bad out there. 62% of the people in this poll said they were worried they would have enough money to pay their rent or mortgage sometime soon.
The rent is too damn high.
I know that song. I know it's not a song. Bear with me. Come on. I don't want you to derail my point, Anthony.
Okay.
My also,
you know, my
point
is the rent is too damn high.
I'm with you. But that struck me as interesting. More people think the state is on the wrong track than the country. That's an interesting flip on the national and maybe the Senate race in a way. And then just going back to this firewall notion about Republicans making all these gains across the country, they were asked about how they felt about the Tea Party and the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Most voters did not like the Tea Party, but they liked the Democratic Party and the Republican Party less, and they actually liked the Republican Party the least.
Right.
Which, again, goes back to this notion of where are the Republican gains in the state that the Republicans have said they're going to get and that they need if they're going to win some of these big races.
Well, I mean, one big difference is that regardless of what you think of his politics, the guy in the governor's office does have an R after his name. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about whether this national mood is an anti-democratic mood or an anti-incumbent mood. Now, nationally, those are one and the same because the Democrats control both houses of Congress and the White House. Here in California, it's a little more complicated. And I mean, we can talk, and perhaps we will in November as Schwarzenegger approaches his departure date, about whether he's a true Republican or not.
Rides into the sunset.
Right. And prepares to write a book or two.
Yeah, and a project with Jim Cameron, as he said in his tweet cast this week.
Well, there you go.
But, you know, we feel like we've put a lid on the governor's race, but because you're talking about Schwarzenegger, we've got to bring this back just for a moment, because I've always felt that Arnold Schwarzenegger was lingering around this governor's race even when he wasn't talked about these many months, as I guess you would say. And, of course, he came front and center this week. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about this Brown ad, because the Brown ad got a lot of attention.
Yeah, maybe we should listen to it first.
Let's.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for different results.
I have built businesses.
I built a business.
Met a payroll. I enter this office beholden to no one except you.
I will owe my office to no one but you.
I don't owe anyone anything.
I don't owe anyone anything.
It's all about leadership.
This is all about leadership.
Jobs, jobs, and jobs.
Jobs, jobs, jobs. We do not have a revenue problem.
We do not have a revenue problem.
We have a spending problem.
We have a spending problem.
Rebuilding California.
Build a new California.
Rebuild California.
Let's build a new California.
We need to run the state as a business.
Running this thing a little bit more like a business.
What's the worst that can happen?
What's the worst thing that can happen?
But I think that ad has been sitting around in concept or in almost completed form in the Brown camp for a very long time. I don't know this. They haven't told me that. But you got to think that for a long time, because we've all been listening to Ms. Whitman's comments on the stump, and they have sounded almost verbatim.
Yeah.
Like what Arnold Schwarzenegger has been saying.
There's some familiar things. And I think, look, the ad is effective not because it's a knockout blow. If this were a dead heat going strong and Brown launches this ad, I don't think it has the impact. But what makes this ad effective is that they've already succeeded in raising some questions about Whitman. And here's just really getting to the fundamental question about whether or not she will be able to fix Sacramento, whether or not she's talking the traditional outsider game. And look, it's a very familiar script to those of us who have listened through the recall and listened through Schwarzenegger's reelection. And I think if you look at Schwarzenegger's approval ratings, which are still very low,
29% in this poll.
Yeah, I think that ad is successful in continuing to raise doubts about Whitman's ability to effectively govern.
And it's interesting too because it did not pull Schwarzenegger into the race this week. I mean, he would not take the bait on talking about it when he was asked about it this week at a unrelated event in his official capacity as the chief executive. And next week's a hell of an interesting event.
It will be. Right?
I mean, this event, if you care about politics, and it's going to be webcast, I'm told. Is that what you're hearing too?
It wouldn't surprise me given the Schwarzenegger administration's track record for webcast.
So on Tuesday, the First Lady has been having these things. Maria Shriver's been having these events now for the last several years. Because, I mean, one of these will always go down in history in Arnold Schwarzenegger time, too, at the beginning of the special election fiasco of 2004 and 2005. But this is the women's conference that the First Lady has been having for the last several years. It's in Long Beach on Tuesday. In a normal year, the fact that the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, was speaking in the morning would be like the thing everybody would be watching.
Who?
No. No offense, Ms. Obama, but we're not watching that. What we want to see is that afternoon, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jerry Brown, Meg Whitman, all on the stage together taking questions.
And Matt Lauer.
From Matt Lauer, the Today Show. And can you just feel the uncomfortableness, is that the word?
Yes.
Can you feel the love of those three together, especially Whitman and Schwarzenegger, I think, frankly. I mean, Brown and Schwarzenegger, you get the sense that they probably personally like each other in a way. And, you know, Brown took a shot at Schwarzenegger in that ad that we just talked about this week. But that's not an unexpected shot
at
Schwarzenegger. But Whitman has been going after Schwarzenegger's legacy issue, the climate change law, over and over and over and over and over, the suspension of it, the freeze it and fix it comments. Schwarzenegger has taken some mild jabs at Whitman over that. His tweet about it,
on the pension
his
issue,
half-handed comment on it this week when I asked him about it at the event, and he basically just said, you know, you can't go backwards, you can't, you know, on this law. And so you know that's coming up, right?
Right.
The pension stuff, there's a lot of tension, I would feel like, there with those two candidates. She continues to say, you know, he meant well, but he was an investor. He didn't really know what he was doing. I mean, that's really what she has said. This is a great event. Let's get some popcorn. Let's sit down. Let's watch this.
It will be interesting. And, also it's the closing days of the campaign. I mean, this is the time for haymakers, right? I mean, we're going to see, I think, continue to see Brown probably try to play it safe and rise above the fray as much as possible. And I think that we're going to see, like we saw in the third debate, a more aggressive Meg Whitman. That would be my guess. Now, whatever the format of this event is, I mean, this is sort of like debate 3B, right? Or 3A, whatever you want to call it. The third and a half debate. But I think that this is sort of the last time for a massive audience, and I think there will be – the eyes of the press corps will certainly be in Long Beach on the 26th.
And if you're Jerry Brown, you desperately want the Arnold Schwarzenegger-Meg Whitman narrative to be the narrative out of that event.
Right.
You want to just – if you're Jerry, you just want to sit on the back of the stage and just kind of like lay low and hope that the Arnold-Meg show takes over and dominates the narrative because you don't want to get in the middle of it again. You don't want to stumble if you're the Brown campaign.
I mean, I don't know that it will. I know it's the Schwarzenegger's event, right? This is sort of their event. But at the same time, I mean, people are really focused on Brown and Whitman. I mean, Schwarzenegger, difficult as this is for him. I mean,
he's not the show?
He's not. It's like, what was that, the Bruce Willis movie, the Expendables?
Well, the Sly Stallone movie, Bruce Willis, right?
Yeah.
Where Arnold had a walk-on.
Right. That's just it. I mean, his role has now been reduced to cameo, one that you might advertise, but
he's
really
not the show.
But do you
think that's going to happen in this event? I don't.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. Everybody will see. Maybe we'll talk about that next week.
Hey, all right.
In our last before the election podcast, where Anthony will make predictions on every race, and we will hold him to them.
In the state of South Dakota.
How many are there in South Dakota?
Three.
That's it for this South Dakota bashing podcast. Sorry.
I love Mount Rushmore. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, sorry. Black Hills. I'm John Myers from KQED. That's Anthony York from Capital Weekly. We'll see you next time.